Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Retro Raw Rundown here on Inside the Ropes. My name is Kenny McIntosh. I am drunk. I'm here with Sandra, and she's tired. Hi, Sandra. How are you? This is episode 321. July 19th.
I'm not drunk. I'm tired. Yeah, I'm tired and slightly hungover, so not as exuberant as you probably. But you know, I'm here. I watched Retro Raw. That was a thing that happened. Hello.
My mic was muted, Sandra. My mic was muted. Anyway, I'm here. So I've come back.
This
from,
is a problem.
I've come back from a sort of drunken endeavor. I've eaten a fairy cake and a yogurt, and I now have a double vodka. So I think that's the best way to go. So
I think that sounds like an excellent plan. What were you up to today that you went on a drunken endeavor?
So
I didn't even talk to Kenny, you guys. Like, we just got online, and he was like, "I'm drunk. Let's hit record." And I said, "Okay."
Well, so I went out for drinks with Hulk and Steve Gunn and a couple of friends, and we went out for drinks. It was supposed to be 5 till 7 because I was told my friends needed to leave at 7, and that was not what happened. They're still there, so I've left for 1 hour to podcast and then go back. So that's what's happening right now. So it's all good. But yeah, so I'm going to really try to sort of stay coherent for this. So we are going to talk about Heat first because that happened. Now, I was trying to fill you in on what happened in Heat, so this was not an episode that didn't make sense. Did my Heat recap help on Facebook?
I think it did help, yes. I can't even speak words. I'm so tired, you guys. I read your Heat recap after I had started watching Raw. Like, I was probably about 20 minutes into Raw before I left for work yesterday, which is when I was reading your Heat recap amidst, you know, accusations from my boss about, like, not being on my phone because apparently they watch the security cameras all the time. Anyway, that's a whole nother story. But yeah, so it did make a little bit more sense.
So, basically on Heat, if you're not watching the Heats along with us, which you can, and you can listen to Finn and I discuss that over on Patreon, at patreon.com/insidetheropes. The Undertaker basically came out and did a promo where he talked about how he dreams of drinking Austin's blood, and the rotten flesh smell, and he wants to drink it. Then he talks about how him and Kane are now back together, they're a team again, it's Brothers of Destruction, and Big Show better be scared. So that was a good opening segment. Which led us into Kevin Kelly on commentary, as we saw Jeff Jarrett walking down the corridor saying, "Up next, is Jeff Jarrett ready to take it doggy style? Is Jeff Jarrett ready to take it doggy style?" I mean, out of context, it's even better. You know, it's just...
This is a sentence I don't want context for. It makes me laugh. What's with, like... Between Road Dog wanting to hit every shiznit doggy style and Deborah and her puppies, like, did WWF have sights set on, like, animal adoption partnerships?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know what they had in mind, but there's a lot of animal references going on. So could Jeff Jarrett take it doggy style? Basically, then Jeff Jarrett came out, he called it Austin again.
Did we find out if Jeff Jarrett could take it doggy style? Did we ever find out?
He lasted about a minute and a half, which, you know, is good for a doggy style.
Okay.
And Deborah's distraction. Then we
Speak
got
for
China.
Yourself.
I mean, do you really want to go down that road in this podcast?
No,
I don't think you did. So China and Billy Gunn interfere. X-Pac makes the save. Just building up the whole DX versus DX thing. We have D'Lo versus Gangrel, where Midian is on commentary, and he says, and I quote, "I had a dream where the D'Lo was in, and then I woke up and I didn't know what universe I was in." I mean, you can't make up.
I mean, we've all been there.
During Midian matches.
I often don't know what universe I'm in during Midian matches.
D'Lo ends up, Gangrel ends up getting the win. It's a whole thing. Because Midian interferes. Edge comes out. So we're building up D'Lo and Midian and Gangrel and Edge. We get a Millennium Countdown for Chris Jericho. X-Pac versus Hardcore Holly, which brings out Kane at the end to chokeslam Holly. Then Big Show comes out. Then Undertaker's at the top of the ramp and glares at Kane, unhappy that he's helping out X-Pac. So Kane leaves, and then X-Pac is beat up by Big Show. It's a whole thing. Then Ken Shamrock does an interview with Jerry Lawler, where he says he wants to face Steve Blackman in the Iron Circle, like he used to face people when he was younger, when he had no money and no clothes in his back. And Jerry Lawler is a real man in the real world running for mayor of Memphis, dressed as a fake king with a badge on, talking to a topless man about an Iron Circle.
The Iron Circle is just cars, right? Like, I've heard of this match.
Oh, we will get to it, Sandra. We will get to it. It's a thing that happens.
It's just, they're just in a car park, right?
Essentially, yeah. We also got the Acolytes against Draws and Prince Albert, which turned into the Hardys and Supply and Demand coming out. It was a big brawl. Draws and Albert got the win. And then the main event was the Big Show versus Triple H, where Undertaker and Kane basically came out to beat up Big Show, and Triple H was angry because he thought he had the match won. So that was heat before we get into Raw. Any thoughts?
I mean, there's a lot happening. There's a lot happening. Iron Circle match, like, they make it sound like this big, important thing, and, like, I'm pretty sure I've heard of this, and it's just that they're fighting around cars. The whole Kane Undertaker saga is giving me a whole lot of emotion because I actively hate the Undertaker and I love Kane and X-Pac together. So, I mean, I have more feelings about that on Raw than I do from all of the heat descriptions and whatnot. But, I mean, it sounds like heat just doesn't let you breathe.
It does not at all. So should we get into Raw?
I think that we should.
So Raw here got a 6.25 rating to Nitro's 3.5, just so we're keeping score at home. The corporate ministry...
So Raw's pretty much kicking Nitro's ass at this point, just consistently.
It's pretty much done. They never win a rating again at any point.
Right.
So the corporate ministry comes out. Vince is in a wheelchair. Vince hopes everyone brought their cameras because the last night they're going to see Austin. Undertaker gets told that now his career's in the line too. He vehemently disagrees with this, gets in Vince's face and reminds him that, you know, you sign the checks, but, you know, no one owns me. And then Triple H gets in his face and he's like, Vince made you and Vince made me and I know that Vince made me. So Triple H wants to face Austin instead. He says that he's proven his loyalty and all that kind of stuff. He thinks Undertaker has Austin on the brain. So basically they're going to have a match tonight and the winner faces Austin and Rock will get whoever's left in the main event. Undertaker tells Triple H that his blood is now in his hands. And then here comes Austin in a truck van thing. He drinks beer on the roof and basically treats them like the weirdos that they are. My favorite bit of this...
See, I didn't realize that Austin was on like a... kind of like an ambulance kind of situation. It was a blood bank van thing.
Yes.
Like for blood drives.
Yes.
Because they're obsessed.
My favorite bit of this though is when Vince was in the wheelchair and Undertaker just like got down in Vince's face and was like, you don't own me. And Vince was like terrified as if he didn't think this was going to be the reaction of telling the dead guy that his career was on the line. Like, what? Any thoughts on this opening segment, Sandra?
Like, has he met The Undertaker? Because it seems like Vince McMahon just can't help but antagonize The Undertaker, and it's always a bad idea. Like, every time Vince McMahon gets in The Undertaker's face, he gets chokeslammed, or he gets tombstoned, or he gets something bad done to him. And now he's in a fucking wheelchair, and, like, does he really think that this is going to go well? Trying to antagonize The Undertaker and trying to, like... pretend that he has all this control over the Undertaker. Like, it never goes well for Vince McMahon. So he's just not being very intelligent about his manipulation. Like, Vince McMahon is at his most effective when he can manipulate people into doing his bidding, but he's at his least effective when he's just like, I'm the boss and I totally own you, because nobody wants to hear that except Triple H, who is such an ass kisser at this point. Like, Triple H is basically just, you know, playing the role of Triple H. He's gonna kiss ass so he can get ahead. He's infuriating. I can't stand him, but I know that I'm not supposed to be able to stand him, but like, I just hate him so much. I mean, the opening segment was fine. It was fun to see Austin come out on a vehicle. I mean, Austin and vehicles always seem to go together. And like I said, I didn't really understand why he was on the vehicle when I started watching the show. But later on when they were like, he's on a blood bank van, I was like, oh, okay, because blood, because we're obsessed with it. There's just a whole lot of like vampirism going on in the lead up to Fully Loaded, with them talking about drinking blood and stuff. It's kind of weird.
Which, I mean, you love a bit of vampirism, so good times, I guess.
Obviously.
It's a whole thing. Do you think this was an effective way to build?
You say it's a whole thing. Like, I just like Buffy the Vampire Slayer mostly.
You love Gangrel too.
I do love Gangrel.
Who is a vampire in the World of Wrestling Federation
currently?
Well, that was going to happen. So overall, did you think the opening segment, they're selling the dissension between the corporate ministry, they're also selling the first blood match on Sunday. Did they do a good job selling the main event? And I know you don't like Undertaker and Triple H, but kind of objectively, do you think that given this main event was a good way to keep questions coming? What did you make of the opening segment overall?
Yeah, it's fine. It's not for me, but it's fine. I think they're doing a fine job of executing it. I'm just really, really done with the Undertaker being in the main event scene, which I am guessing I'm not going to be done with soon. But
you are,
you know, like you really? That's so exciting.
This is the last main event the Undertaker has on Raw or a pay-per-view for a year.
Oh, that's so incredibly heartwarming to hear, because I'm really, really done with him being in the championship picture. Like, I just really don't like it. Yeah, I mean, I think, like, objectively, they're doing a fine job to build this, because I don't really understand, because Undertaker's like, I have issues with Austin, and it's personal, and I'm taking him out for me, not for you, McMahon. And I'm just like, what personal issue do you have exactly? Like, I don't understand, but okay, like, that part of that is on me for just not really being very invested in the Undertaker currently, so I am fully willing to accept the blame for not being as invested in this as I could be.
Then we got Road Dogg and China preparing for their dog collar match. Shane's with Vince and Triple H, and Triple H promises he's going to take care of him if Vince does the same thing, which leads us to the dog collar match between Road Dogg and China. Road Dogg calls her a bitch and demands that she gets collared. They have this match. It doesn't really go anywhere because Billy Gunn runs down and then they try to hang Road Dogg together. And then finally X-Pac
runs
off.
That does happen.
X-Pac runs out after like a long amount of time. How do you feel about hangings on Raw during a dog collar match, Sandra?
I mean, I'm categorically anti-hanging in wrestling and life, so not a huge fan of it. Yeah, this was fine, I guess. I mean, Road Dogg was just kind of being a dick to China, and I know that China's the bad guy and everything, but he was just like, you know, it's a dog collar match, and you see where mine is, and, you know, like, I'm sure you wore one last night with Triple H, ha ha ha, and I'm just like, don't king shame China. If she wants to wear a dog collar with Triple H, she should be more than welcome to wear a dog collar with Triple H. I don't care what they do. But yeah, I mean, this was fine. It was basically just a vehicle for Billy Gunn to come out and beat up Road Dogg. Like, that's essentially what happened. And it was slightly cathartic just because, you know, Road Dogg was being an asshole. I just prefer when Road Dogg doesn't speak to women.
I mean, now he's good at speaking to women. No.
Is he?
Well, yeah, like, he was the head writer of SmackDown. Like, he helped run SmackDown when, like, Nikki Bella and Carmella were having their matches. And people like, he's good now. Just when he was younger, he had some issues that were pretty problematic, to understate it slightly.
Yeah, I'm just not... Yeah, like, I'm just not really the biggest fan. But I think... Even in this little bit that China was doing, like, her kicks to Road Dogg on the outside looked really bad. Like, really awkward. Just her, like, kicking him as he is basically hanging there, as Billy Gunn, like, has him hanging by the dog collar and stuff. So it's pretty obvious that China is not super athletic. But, like, she's very effective as a character, so I would definitely want her around. But you can tell that, like, when it comes to movement, she's not necessarily the best.
It's a thing. I mean, a hanging on Raw is not something you expect, but it was there.
The thing is, it's not like, it doesn't even seem that much of an anomaly in 1999, does it? I mean, like, we saw the Big Boss Man get hanged at WrestleMania and he's fine, so
this is true.
It won't stick. We saw Hawk, like, pushed off a Tron and he's fine too.
Yeah. Like, so we get a knock on Vince's door. He's pretty scared. Triple H and Shane answer it. It's the Mean Street Posse. And then up next we get Shane the Posse. Shane, you know, is trying to remind everyone that, you know, he's just doing what he does to be a good brother. He wants to apologize to Stephanie. Test, you know, sort of begs her not to go. What? How would you rate the acting here from 1 being the worst, 10 being the best?
This is maybe a step above Natalia, but that's like, I mean, maybe like a half step above Natalia. It's so bad. And I don't understand what Tess thinks is going to happen to her. I mean, granted, like, this is the woman who's been kidnapped at the World Wrestling Federation and, like, forced to almost marry the Undertaker and stuff. So I get, like, maybe he doesn't want her in harm's way. But she's going out there to talk to Shane. You know, like, she's not in the Undertaker's sights anymore. And she's not, like, going to be a kidnapping victim again. Like, do you think that Shane is going to actively attack her? Because Shane didn't, like, he didn't try to elbow her in the face last week. Like, that was an actual accident, it looked like. So I don't know why Tess is like, don't go out to the ring, Stephanie, as though he's going to lose her forever. And she's like, Andrew, it's fine. It'll all be okay. I promise. I'm just going to talk to my brother. I promise I'll be okay. I promise. I was like, what the fuck? Are you sending her to war? No, she's going to go and talk to her brother. I think it's going to be okay.
It's, I mean, you got to sell the angle. You got to sell the angle. But I know what you're saying. Like, it was clearly an accident last week and all that stuff. But anyway, so Stephanie reassures Tess that she's going to be okay. She goes down. She looks pretty sad. He tries to apologize. He yells that it's Tess's fault. Then Joey Abs is willing to take her back, so she has the option of going with Joey Abs. Stephanie, then,
I swear, this Stephanie and Joey Abs situation is like way too many guys I've known in real life who are like, oh yeah, like I would totally be with you. Like I totally, you know, I will give you the honor of being with me. And I'm just like, no, I do not wish to be with you. That is not a thing. And then they're like, oh no, but trust me, like you'll be so much happier. No,
what, she doesn't want to be Stephanie Abs.
Like, she does not want to be Stephanie Abs. She wants to be Stephanie Test.
I guess so. Stephanie makes fun of him, saying that she was like on one date as a favor. It was terrible. Joey then tells her how great it used to be, and he then like plays with her hair and tells her that he's well, like you say, well, take her back. Steph slaps him, says, "Don't touch me ever again," and for Shane to stay out of her life. And then Shane will say, "You know, I'm gonna do it my way. I'm gonna make you happy no matter what." So, like a cryptic ending, and I mean, it was nice to see Stephanie slap the jerk guy. That was a good part of it.
It was. That was cathartic. I enjoyed that, and I liked her saying, you know, get your damn hands off of me and don't touch me without my consent, asshole. Because it's not cool to just be like going up to this woman who has clearly rejected you and said no, and then you're still like playing with her hair and being all creepy and stuff. Like, again, I know way too many dudes like this. It's not cool and it's not fun, and you're not doing us any favors by trying to like force your presence upon us. So yeah, like it was nice to see Stephanie kind of stand up to him. Shane is just being super creepy though too, where he's just like, I'll do nothing, like I'll stop at nothing for your happiness. And it's like, I think she would be happier if you would stay out of her life. Like what she has said to you explicitly, verbatim, is stay out of my life. So that is what she wants at this point. That would be the helpful thing to do, Shane, not like continue to like poke at her and poke at her and nag at her and just be like, I'm gonna protect you and make you happy no matter what.
I mean, I think the story is pretty good. You know, if you take out some of the kind of far-fetched parts of it, like, Stephanie here was good. She came back at him. She slapped him. She didn't take his shit. So, overall, I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, like, her acting is horrendous at this point. I kind of wish that we were getting this story with, like, Stephanie McMahon of the acting ability that she has now, because she's not the most convincing here, but the story is actually pretty good, and I like that, you know, at least the creepy dudes are the bad guys, which is helpful.
Always helpful. The Rock arrives. He signs something for somebody. Then we find out that Jesse Ventura is going to be the referee at SummerSlam, which is a big deal. Like a guy who's a governor of a state is going to be a referee at SummerSlam. It's a pretty big deal.
Yeah, like, it is a big deal.
A governor in a state in America is a pretty big deal, right?
Yeah. A governor. I mean, that's like the person in charge of the state, which is a big deal.
So he's coming back. There was a lot of kind of talk about, you know, people saying he shouldn't be doing it. His argument was, well, why can I not do it? Like, what's the problem here? Because his office shuts on a Friday, opens back up on a Monday, so why can he not do a wrestling event on a Sunday night in his own hometown?
Yeah, because it's in Minnesota, right?
Yeah, it's in Minnesapolis. So
and he's in Minnesota at this point?
Yeah, it was in Minneapolis, so there was nowhere for him to travel. He was going to be right there. But there was a lot of negative press about him deciding to do this show.
It is funny, like, hearing about the negative press and all that kind of stuff, like, considering everything Kane's been doing nowadays. I mean, like, he's a mayor. He's not a governor. It's a different situation. But he's still, like, in charge of an area. And, you know, he's, like, doing mayor things where he puts on his mask and choke slams people. So, I don't know. It's just, it's kind of funny seeing the whole Jesse Ventura thing. And then hearing that Jerry Lawler is running for mayor at the same time. Like, it's just very strange. The world is strange.
It's very odd. Then we have the four-way tag match with the Hardys, the Acolytes, Albert Andros, and Val Venus, and the Godfather, which obviously started on Heat, and now we're getting that in here. The Hardys end, of course, getting the win. A very short elimination match, and we're going to have the Acolytes and the Hardys at the pay-per-view. What did you make of the match and the idea of trying to bring some other teams in there, even if you hate the teams, with all of your heart?
I didn't like bringing in the other teams because I hate those teams with all of my heart. So I was not very pleased to see that this was happening on Raw. And I am not going to lie to you, Kenny. I didn't pay that much attention to this match. I was just happy that the Hardys won.
Good. Glad to know that you paid attention to it. So yeah, but it was a pretty decent match, actually. If you had paid attention, it was good. Like, Bradshaw and Farouk actually did do some good stuff in it. Godfather is terrible, obviously. Whenever Val was in there, he was pretty good. And the Hardys are good too. So it was short and sweet, and the Hardys got the win.
I just like the Hardys, and I want them to win over those other teams because they're cretins.
And they did.
So I was happy.
Up next on the show, we got Jeff Jarrett defend his IC title against Christian. Christian's doing pretty well in the match, but of course, Deborah, as always, gets in the apron. Ref distracted. By the time he turns around, Jeff Jarrett's kicked out of Christian's move. And then Jeff Jarrett, of course, in the end hits the stroke and gets the win. So he continues to be a dastardly heel. But post-match, the lights flicker, they go out. The Bruise music hits and Jeff Jarrett has a bloodbath. Edge comes down, they brawl, and Edge and Christian are kind of baffled by the blood. So it seems like Gangrel's maybe controlling things from somewhere else. We don't know what's going on. How did this work for you? Because I know you love Edge and Christian. You love the bloodbaths. Did it work for you?
Yeah, it worked for me. I do love Edge and Christian. It was nice to see Christian have a singles match. Like, because it's Jeff Jarrett versus Edge at the pay-per-view, right?
Yes.
Like, that's what we're building to?
Yes.
Yeah. So seeing Jeff Jarrett fight Edge's partner was cool. And seeing Christian get, you know, visual pins on Jeff Jarrett. But, you know, the ref just keeps being distracted by Deborah. Like, you'd think that the referee, being a seasoned referee, should be like, oh, maybe I should pay attention to the match and not to the lady on the apron who's yelling. But no, the ref is just constantly paying attention to the lady on the apron who's yelling. I wish there were an option, like, you know how WWE Network has, you know, like, English audio, and then there's like audio for other languages and stuff that you can select on the network. Uh-huh. I wish there were an option of just like Jerry Lawler free, like, so that every time Jeff Jarrett has a match and Deborah is out there, I can just like watch the match without having to hear Jerry Lawler talk about puppies constantly, because it's just so irritating. Like, it makes it more difficult to enjoy this for me, because it's just like, did she show a puppy? Puppies? No, go away. Just stop talking, Jerry Lawler. That would be helpful. But I can't like turn the sound off, because then I'm going to miss what JR is saying. And JR actually has helpful things to say from time to time. So that's frustrating. But I mean, Christian's a good wrestler. Jeff Jarrett's a good wrestler. I enjoyed this. And it does make Jeff Jarrett seem like a dastardly baddie. And the bloodbath thing at the end was weird, because commentary was trying to sell like, well, it couldn't have been Christian who did the bloodbath because he was in the ring, and it couldn't have been Edge because he wasn't here. So like, who did the bloodbath? And I was like, I didn't think that's how bloodbaths worked. Like, I thought that they were just some sort of mystical thing, and you didn't have to like, I didn't think it was like someone physically pouring the blood or whatever onto another person. I thought it just sort of happened. So I was kind of confused about the logistics of like why they were confused by it. But especially because Christian was like right out there in the ring. So it's not like he was far away. But I mean, the implication is that Gangrel is maybe controlling things or lurking, or maybe there's someone else, but I mean, I'm pretty sure it's supposed to be Gangrel. But it worked for me. And Jeff Jarrett looked raging that he got bloodbathed and stuff, and Edge and Christian just kind of looking confused and not really sure what's going on. And I like it. I like the whole thing.
Yeah, I thought it was decent. I mean, the thing with Lawler is, like, Lawler is mostly a decent commentator. It's just when this kind of stuff comes up, he becomes a bit unbearable. And yeah, I can see why that would be problematic. But they did a decent job of having you kind of of telling you, you know, who could have done it. I mean, we all know it's Gangrel. Come on now. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's fine. So yeah, it was pretty fun. Then we see Rock walking in the back. Triple H and China are conferring with each other. Jarrett's pissed about the bloodbath. And that takes us to The Rock versus Mr. Ass. And, of course, China is hell-bent on distraction. She ends up towards the end getting up in the apron, distracting the referee. Billy Gunn jumps up, but he's shoved into China and then gets straight into a Rock Bottom. People's elbow, but then China hits him with a chair. Fameaster finishes him off. I mean, so I don't want to spoil anything, because I know in Retro Raw we're not supposed to spoil anything because you've not seen it. Mm-hmm. But, so The Rock has this match with Billy Gunn, which I would say, for the most part, makes you feel like The Rock is the star and Billy Gunn is the mid-card guy. Is that fair?
Yeah, that's kind of how this came off. Billy Gunn having just won King of the Ring. He even has a big crown on his ass now, which is neat.
I mean, yeah, sure. But the thing is, so we get that. But the problem with this is we have The Rock versus Billy Gunn. And even though Billy Gunn gets the win, you still get the feeling that The Rock is the star. And then we go...
Well, it's the same way that Billy Gunn got his wins at King of the Ring, right? Like, because China hits The Rock with a chair here. And JR sells that beautifully. Like, she has a chair, damn her, and all that kind of stuff. And I think this is one of those situations where the referee looking away was actually timed really, really well. I think China did great timing this. But yeah, I mean, like, Billy Gunn gets the win, but it doesn't seem like he's deserving of the win in any way, shape, or form, and doesn't feel like he's on The Rock's level.
So the problem becomes is that, so in storyline, just so you kind of get why this might, to me, be a bit like, what? Is Billy Gunn gets the win with this help from China. Then Billy Gunn and then The Rock and Triple H have a match at Fully Loaded. Then The Rock and Billy Gunn are going to fight at SummerSlam. So this is building.
I mean, I don't really understand it. Like, The Rock and Billy Gunn has always been the example of, like, how not to get someone over, right? Like, that's just the example I've always heard. And I don't know why this feud, of all of the feuds in The Rock's history, is the one that's always, like, come across my radar, but it always has. So I know that that's where we're leading, so you're not spoiling anything for me.
And it's an accurate description.
But yeah, like, this is how not to get someone over, right? Like, it's baffling. I don't understand. Like, if it's just meant as a vehicle to get the Rock, fine, I guess, but The Rock doesn't feel like any bigger of a star for what he's doing with Billy Gunn. He feels like on the same level as he would without having to, like, run Billy Gunn into the ground. And I know it's Billy Gunn and some people aren't the biggest fans of him, but I think he's really good. Like, he's a very good wrestler. I think he does have charisma. Like, he's amazing on the mic, but he can hold his own. And the whole thing just kind of bums me out because I like him as a performer. So I kind of wish that he wouldn't have just been run into the ground by The Rock.
Yeah, I mean, you know, The Rock is not someone who I would say over his career was someone who, like, wouldn't put people over. I mean, he put him over here. I just think the booking of it is just kind of poor. Like, I don't think it makes Billy Gunn. You still walk away from this kind of going, Rock's the star, Billy Gunn's the mid-card guy. Like, that's how you feel. So, it doesn't make much sense to me. So, anyway, he gets the win. Billy Gunn does get the win here, I guess, given that. Then we see...
I mean, it was nice to see him get a win in some form, I suppose. Which is, again, crazy. Like, he just won King of the Ring, and I'm like, ugh. So nice to see Billy Gunn win a thing. But it never feels like he wins it never feels like he is presented as much of a star.
No, he does not. He never feels like he's really presented as a top guy. He feels like someone who's, like, lurking in top guy territory and, like, he's trying not to get caught.
Like, watching through 1999 just makes me wish that, like, Billy Gunn and Triple H had switched spots.
I mean, I will still disagree with you, but yeah, that's fine. That's fair.
I know that you disagree, but that's, I mean, just, I feel
like if Billy Gunn was put in that position, there's no way he would have made it to where Triple H did. Like, never in a million years. But yeah, we'll never know. We will always be, it will always be a speculative thing, I guess.
Yeah.
We see Austin pacing backstage. Then we see Triple H and Vince having a chin wag, which leads us to Al Snow versus the Big Boss Man. Al's got a bunch of stuff in the ring, and he's sort of like begging Boss Man to hit him with stuff. Boss Man, of course, obliges and just knocks him out, beats him, and Al's just cuffed to the rope and beaten. So Big Boss Man just annihilates Al Snow here.
He does annihilate Al Snow here, and JR is just like, stop the damn match, this can't go on anymore. And they're like, you know, the Big Boss Man is so dastardly and he's so awful. Is this the beginning of the Big Boss Man and Al Snow in some sort of program?
I mean, I don't know if this is the beginning. I mean, Al Snow does win this by DQ officially, which I mean, God knows how, but that is the case.
Well, because it wasn't a hardcore rules match, yeah. And the Big Boss Man is just using weapons, as the Big Boss Man is wont to do. Because the Big Boss Man is terrible at winning things, but just likes to beat people up.
He does. So, I don't think we're
quite... No, I'm just asking, because I know that you don't want to spoil too much, but I'm just wondering if this is where it begins, or if that's later on.
I think this is, like, there is something... Do you know, yeah, it's pretty much the beginning. It pretty much is. I'm not going to lie to you.
I'm so excited.
We have now begun the journey to the death of a dog, essentially.
Yes. I mean, the Big Boss Man just being, like, the worst human is what I've really been looking forward to.
You're going to get it. So then we see Undertaker backstage. I mean, what would you say he was doing? He was, like, meditating? Or, like, he was very intense backstage.
He was very intense backstage.
Vince is like checking his watch for some reason. Like, I don't know, like seeing how soon the main event was. Which led us to Edge, Midian, D'Lo, and Gangrel in a four-way. Tag match. Edge and D'Lo against Midian and Gangrel. They have this tag match. Edge and D'Lo Brown pretty much dominate the match because the heels are terrible at wrestling. And... Edge spears Gangrel, D'Lo finishes Midian with a frog splash, and that's all she wrote. So, I mean, I don't know why this is meant to, like, make you in any way excited watching these guys have a feud separately, but it is what it is, I guess.
I guess, like, I was very confused watching this match, and I just watched this, like, right before we recorded, because this is, like, this is fresh in my mind. It took me until the end of the match to be like, wait, who's in this match? Why is Edge teaming with D'Lo Brown? Like, why isn't Edge with... What? Oh, yeah, Christian was on the show in the match I watched yesterday. This did not really do all that much to, like, build toward Fully Loaded or make me want to see anything. Is D'Lo Brown fighting Midian for the European Championship? Is that what is happening?
Yes.
Wow. Yep. That's something.
I mean, look, would you not rather that Midian was in there with someone who could probably quite easily defeat him?
Well, obviously. Obviously, that is what I prefer. And I love D'Lo. So, like, if D'Lo gets to win the European Championship back, I would be in favor of that. And the Edge Gangrel story is interesting. Like, we still kind of don't understand Gangrel's reasoning, I guess. Like, we haven't heard him explain it. And I would really like to hear Gangrel explain it because his promos are so terrible that I love them so much. Like, I want to hear Gangrel's explanation in all of his cryptic words and lisping, so I'm just bummed that we haven't gotten that explanation. But the Edge Gangrel story is interesting, and they were in commentary as well about, like, then where does that leave Christian, Edge's brother? Like, because if you remember, like, Gangrel brought Christian in to kind of, like, face off with Edge originally before they all just kind of became the Brood together for reasons ? Gangrel was the one who, like, brought in Christian, so there's an interesting relationship dynamic there, I suppose. Like, Christian was not out here to help his brother, and he wasn't out there to hurt his brother either. Like, he was playing it neutral and staying in the back and probably getting some food after his, you know, undeserved loss to Jeff Jarrett earlier in the night. But yeah, like, I'm more intrigued by the Brood stuff than I am Midian. I mean, Midian just, he's an enigma, isn't he? Like, in the opening segment when he's just standing there with his belt. He just looks so out of place.
He is an enigma of shitey proportions.
He's the worst.
We then see Austin Strowman in the back. That takes us into Test versus Steve Blackman. They have the definition of a mediocre wrestling match. Like, it is so mediocre. There's one at the end, Test hits Steve Blackman with a swing neckbreaker. It's so average.
Test versus Steve Blackman. Did you think it was going to be anything else? It's the match that Charisma forgot.
I never thought I'd be happy to see a run-in from Joey Abs, but I was.
Yeah.
He comes in. He ends up getting speared. The posse comes in. Shane slaps him around. Then Shamrock runs down. And the posse and Shane run away. Ken Shamrock, you know, sticking to his union roots. You don't see the rest of them doing it. Good for him.
Good for Ken Shamrock. I love Ken Shamrock. I am happy to see Ken Shamrock every time he appears. I am so bummed that we don't get much longer with Ken Shamrock because I think he's just fucking phenomenal. I love him.
He is the best. So then we go back to The Undertaker still meditating for some
just
reason.
Hanging out.
Like early in the show, he was like, "You don't own me, McMahon. I do what I want." Now he's meditating all night.
Well, he's thinking about what he wants, Kenny.
I guess
he needs to be very focused.
Up next, we get Big Show and Hardcore Holly against X-Pac and Kane. I did not realize that when I watched the Heats and the Raws together that I was going to be really into Big Show and Hardcore Holly against X-Pac and Kane. But here we are, and here I am. And that's where we are. So the match is kind of going. I love Hardcore Holly thinking he's a super heavyweight. It's my favorite thing. Undertaker.
It's just bizarre. He's the big shot.
He is
the big shot.
He's the big shot. Undertaker ends up coming out. He chokeslams X-Pac. He has the steel steps, and then he runs them into the back of Big Show and in Bob Holly's face. And then Kane kind of leaves the Undertaker. Kane heads back down to the ring to check on X-Pac, but Undertaker goes after him and stops him, and then Kane realizes that Undertaker's the one that chokeslammed X-Pac. Undertaker's trying to reason with Kane, only to be chokeslammed. And Kane cuddles X-Pac and carries him to the back, and it's so sweet, and I can't handle it, Sandra.
Legitimately almost started crying in this segment. Like, I was so angry at The Undertaker, like, beating up X-Pac, because poor X-Pac, right? Like, now that he's not speaking and he's just wrestling and being awesome again, poor X-Pac, he's my fave. And The Undertaker's just beating him up like a dick. And then, you know, obviously, like, he's trying to tear Kane's alliance away from X-Pac. He's basically just trying to ruin Kane's friendship when The Undertaker's just an asshole, right? And so it was so cathartic to see Kane turn on The Undertaker and chokeslam him for his trouble and say, no, X-Pac is my friend. He has stood by me. He has stood up for me. He has defended me. And you are a terrible person, Undertaker. And I'm going to chokeslam you into the ground, and I'm going to help my friend, and friendship prevailed, and it made me so happy, and this is exactly how it should have gone. And I legitimately, like, have so many feelings about Kane and X-Pac, and I almost started crying today watching Retro Raw in my living room.
I mean, this was great. This was fantastic. The whole story about, like, you know, X-Pac and so Kane and Undertaker getting back together and all that kind of stuff, like, it's so good.
Because I didn't want them back together. I didn't want them back together at all. The Undertaker's a terrible influence, and Kane is just such a sweet soul. And, I mean, like, yeah, he set his parents' graves on fire that one time, but, like, he was under the influence of Paul Bearer. It wasn't his fault. So I love it. I really, really love it. And I want Kane to not be with The Undertaker. I don't really want to see them fight each other either. But, like, it was so, so cathartic for me to see him get chokeslammed.
I mean, the thing that was so great about it was they tease you with the idea for weeks that you're going to get Taker and Kane back together. And then they do it through these couple of episodes. And eventually, when Kane finally realizes Undertaker is the dastardly guy that's beating up X-Pac, he's not happy about it. And it's so good.
And it's so good. And I was going to ask you, like, we weren't supposed to want Kane and Undertaker together, right? Like,
no, but you're
reacting
meant
to the story, right?
You're reacting exactly what you should have. But the point is that, like, the story's so good, and, like, this is an example, and I know I say it all the time, and I don't mean to be a broken record. This is what is missing today. Give us the tease of people who used to be together in a way that makes sense, where then you get the turn, and you're invested in the turn because you don't want the other thing to happen. Like, all this stuff that happened made sense. Mm-hmm. None of it was like, there's not really a hole to pick in it. Big Show was beating up Kane, so his brother came to his aid, but his brother then thought, well, Undertaker thought, well, we're back together now. So we're now the Brothers of Destruction. Forget that Kane had evolved and become kind of humanized through his relationship
Kane
with
had
Hickman.
gone out into the world and found his own path and his own people or person.
Exactly. So, and then when Undertaker, you know, goes after X-Pac, and then Kane realizes it's all so good. It's just, you know, I understand, you know, you talked earlier on about the whole, like, Jerry Lawler's chat during the Jeff Jarrett and Christian match, which is totally valid. But, like, not everything in the Attitude Era is shit. There is some really good storytelling that happens. And we see it fairly regularly. So while some of it is trash, the whole, like, it's all trash. It's not all trash. Some of it is, but some of it's good. And that's why we here at Inside the Ropes like to have nuanced conversation where we can call the stuff that's trash, trash. And we can talk about the stuff that is actually good and holds up 20 years later. Because the thing that
I agree. Like, I'm happy to find good storytelling in the Attitude Era. Like, that's the part of the Attitude Era that I want brought back, or, like, brought more to television. I think we see a lot of it in NXT, to be fair. Like, I think a lot of this type of storytelling is shown in NXT and then other promotions as well. It's just not on the WWE
that's
roster
when,
normally.
That's the way Hunter got over. So that's the way he knows. But it's, you know, the whole kind of blanket, it's all rubbish. It's not all rubbish. The point about this part of it is that, you know, the Taker Kane thing was really well done, and there's nuances to it. And, like, the thing I didn't realize at the time, because we didn't get the heats, right? We didn't get the heats back in 1990, so I never got to see them. But when you watch it now, all the Big Show story stuff is done on heat. And when you watch it, it adds to the story. Because if I just watch Raw, I don't really care about Big Show. There's nothing there, but a lot of his stuff happens on heat. Which,
yeah, because, like, I'm not as invested in the Big Show Bob Holly, like, portion of this that happened. I mean, obviously I have all the feelings in the world about Kane and X-Pac anyway, so that's going to overshadow whatever else is happening around it. And, like, seeing The Undertaker get chokeslammed is just so glorious. But, like, having you describe what happens on heat to me, like, I can see where, yeah, like, you're more invested in the Big Show as well. Like, the ancillary program helps instead of just making you want to throw yourself off a cliff because there's too much wrestling.
Exactly. So and then X-Pac hugs Kane. I can't handle it. It's too cute.
It's the cutest ever.
It's too cute. The main event up next is Triple H and Undertaker, and I know that you're not crazy about it, but I think there is a good story here about the idea of, like, Vince runs the corporate ministry. Hunter clearly wants to be the corporate champion. Undertaker does not want to be, like, he doesn't care about Vince McMahon at all. So they have this match. Pretty hot atmosphere from the crowd. It goes back and forth. I think it's okay. It's not a great match. I mean, Undertaker, you can see, is starting to... Can you start to see Undertaker's gut now?
Yeah.
Like, this guy's injured.
He's moving not very well. Like, he looks like he needs time off.
And I do think here, I mean, I know you probably agree with me, I do think Hunter here carried enough of it to make it more bearable than it would have been otherwise. I think this for me was the first time I went, oh, he's actually, like, taken some of the other parts of it to make this not as bad as it would have been if he had just been, like, a year ago Triple H or 6 months ago Triple H.
He is better than 6 months ago Triple H. He's still not for me.
But then, of course, China gets involved, Rock comes out and gets involved, Undertaker, Austin comes out and gets involved. It all goes wrong.
Did this match end? I'm trying to remember.
I don't really know, to be honest with you, because at one point Triple H is up in the tombstone and Austin runs down and then beats up the Undertaker. Then comes Rock, he clotheslines Triple H over the top. Undertaker and Austin are fighting, Austin's fights back, and then they kind of fight up towards the blood van, we'll just call it that. Undertaker gets the upper hand again, and then he Austin is up sliding behind Undertaker and shoves him into the van, and then he ends up locking Undertaker in it. Austin goes back towards the ring. He notices Vince. He gets a beer, takes a swig, grabs the wheelchair, punches him in the fucking head, then takes the belt, blasts Vince in the head. Vince takes the best wheelchair bump I've ever seen in my life. Vince is bladed. Austin then signs the bit of paper on Vince's... I can't remember if I'm getting the right way around, but Austin ends up signing the paper on Vince's blood. Paul Bearer somehow has magically gotten Undertaker out. He staggers out towards Austin, takes a beer can, hits him with it, rips it at his face. I mean,
there's a lot going on.
There's a lot to go on. It's really hard for me to recap these things. So What the fuck went on at this main event, Sandra?
I mean, I'm just trying to figure out if the match actually ended, because, I mean, the whole stipulation was that if Triple H beats The Undertaker, then he takes The Undertaker's place at Fully Loaded. Now, I know that the match at Fully Loaded is Steve Austin versus The Undertaker. I know I watched this match years ago.
So
I don't remember what happened.
The official ending is that The Undertaker defeated Triple H via disqualification.
Because Austin attacked him.
So Undertaker's still in.
Okay, cool. Because I guess if the match didn't have a winner, then Undertaker would just kind of stay in the match by default because Triple H didn't win. But I was just curious. You know how I am about rules and things. But yeah, like there's so much going on here. Paul Bearer's reactions to everything are just brilliant. Vince McMahon's facial reactions too, as he's just like sitting there in his wheelchair looking super, super scared, like he's going to wet himself because Steve Austin is coming after him. I mean, Vince McMahon, like when Austin just punches him in the head, it was like, yes, punch him in the head. This was great. And you can see like Vince McMahon, he's like putting his head down, and then you can see him like moving his hand toward his head. Like he is not very subtle about the fact that he is going to cut open his own face. And so like they're trying to hide it with camera work and stuff, and he's like trying to have his head down and like not really show it, but it, I'm pretty sure he bladed, like, did he blade before the belt shot too?
I think so,
because I'm pretty sure that like he was already bleeding by the time Austin hit him with the belt.
So much went on here, like so much that I can't, it's difficult for me. I watched this today and I'm already like, I think this happened before this part, and there's too much.
There's a lot. But I mean, basically, like, there are shenanigans. It does do very well to lead to The Undertaker versus Steve Austin. First Blood is just not a stipulation that does anything for me. Like, we haven't really talked about that. But,
well, I mean, because, you know, we're in 2019, we're leading to First Blood, Cody and Sean Spears. And I'm not a First Blood guy.
Yeah, I'm not a First Blood fan. Especially because, like, First Blood matches have the, like, just the way they're executed, like it kind of has the tendency to go wrong. Like, was it Austin and Kane had the First Blood match?
Yes, at King of the Ring last year, and that's when Undertaker
came in. And then Austin's
came
arm got cut open, and it was like, why hasn't he lost the match?
No. Yeah. But then Undertaker came in, hit Austin with a chair, that lost him the title.
Yeah, but I mean, like, it's just, if you get like a scrape on your arm or something in a First Blood match, like technically you should lose that match. And so,
well, that wasn't meant to happen. So that's the problem with that.
But that's the thing, right? Like, yeah, I know it's not meant to happen, but that just kind of like takes you out of it. So I don't know. Like, First Blood is not my favorite stipulation. I think all the storytelling around First Blood is just really super hokey, honestly. Like, Austin coming out in a blood van is hilarious, but like, why are they so obsessed with blood? Like, why is The Undertaker suddenly a vampire again? Like, if he, I wish The Undertaker would dress a Sad Bat Undertaker for this particular occasion. It'd be a good callback.
Fair, yeah. Where would your thumb be for this episode, this absolutely insane episode of Monday Night Raw leading us to Fully Loaded? Where would your thumb be? I'm pretty curious.
I'm trying to decide if it's a thumbs in the middle or a thumbs up, because like a lot of the shenanigans and stuff I liked, but there was a lot of stuff in the middle that I wasn't a huge fan of. Like, the tag match situation, just I didn't really understand. But I think it's a thumbs up, though. I think it's fine as a go-home show.
Yeah, I think it's thumbs up for the bonkersness of it. Like,
yeah, like, I wasn't bored.
Because I think, like, go-home shows are sometimes the hardest ones to do, because you have to kind of sell the last bit of the pay-per-view. Mm-hmm. I think it's a good job.
I think it did well to build toward the main event of the pay-per-view. I think some of the other matches it may be lacking.
So here's the card for Fully Loaded in 6 days. We have Jeff Jarrett versus Edge for the Intercontinental Championship, an Acolytes Rules match for the tag team titles of the Hardys versus the Acolytes. Midian defends his European Championship.
What's
against
an Acolytes Rules match?
We will get to it. Midian defends his European Championship against D'Lo Brown. Al Snow defends the Hardcore title against Big Boss Man. Kane versus The Big Show with Hardcore Holly as the guest referee. The Iron Circle match, Steve Blackman versus Ken Shamrock. The Rights to DX, Road Dogg and X-Pac against Billy Gunn China. A Fully Loaded strap match to determine the number one contender for the WWF title at SummerSlam. The Rock versus Triple H. And the First Blood match for the WWF title. If Undertaker loses, Vince is gone. If Austin loses, he doesn't have another title shot again. Austin versus Undertaker. Pretty strong card overall for the show.
It's a strong card. It's just like, and again, I don't know what happens at Fully Loaded because I can't remember who wins the main event. But like, just looking at the stipulations for it, like neither one of those stipulations can happen. Like, I know that Vince McMahon isn't going to leave the company and be gone, But I also know that Steve Austin gets another title shot at some point.
Well,
so
I mean, the good thing in a way is if you don't know, at least there's then still some intrigue about, like, well, what one do they not keep? Like, what is the one that they do not stick to?
I just really don't want Undertaker to be the champion again. Blech.
So here's some other news that was happening this past week. Next week I'm going to talk to you about, remind me, about the Rena Merrill lawsuit, which is in the process of being settled. What else has been going on? Nicole Bass, Goldust, and Ryan Shamrock are all gone. Nicole Bass was officially given notice. Here's what it said in The Observer. I believe she had just signed a contract but was claiming that she could earn $15,000 to $20,000 per month doing so-called apartment wrestling, which is a fetish thing for guys who want to get overpowered by a woman. She wasn't making anywhere close to that in WWF, and it didn't look like she'd be making it anytime soon. There was unhappiness over her failure to improve in the ring. There was also the problem that as long as she was around, fans would want to see her wrestle China, and the problem with that match is management felt it would kill the illusion of China. They don't want China selling for other women at the moment. Not to mention the match would be so awful, they'd figure China would get damaged.
That match would be so bad.
Mm-hmm. Her being there kind of worked against China's original gimmick, but with the new face, giant implants, and makeup, China's gimmick is different now. There was a... who else? Let me get to the bit. Where the fuck is Goldust? Goldust has been out with a bad back. There are a number of reasons here. Among them, he and Terry Runnels are about to be divorced, and apparently with her signing a new deal, they felt she was the more marketable of the two. As a side note, bookers have incredible real-life power, as over the past few years, we've seen four married couples have booked breakups. The Sullivans, the McMichaels, the Meadows, and the Runnels, and except the Meadows, all followed with almost identical breakups in real life. After the McMichaels breakup, people joked that Kevin Sullivan, who booked both WCW angles, was the expert at booking marriages to end, including his own, particularly since the angle in his with Benoit went out with his wife legitimately winding up with Benoit. We were told, and I don't know how serious this was, but it was said to me as him being very serious. I guess it could have been his way of getting a release to go to WCW, but he's expected to wind up now that his dad has some power, Dusty Rhodes, and that he suggested to McMahon that he wanted an operation to have implants put in his chest and even have the operation filmed for television so he could take the Goldust character to a new level. Obviously, he'd heard that the Thai male kickboxer Piranha undergoing a sex change had a lot of publicity all over the world. McMahon wasn't willing to go that far, and Runnels felt they weren't giving him a chance to reach his potential, and that led to the exit. Ryan Shamrock wouldn't sign the contract they offered her, as she, at the age of 20, didn't want to make a long-term commitment as they wanted her to, so both sides have gone their separate ways.
Ryan, you said?
Ryan, yep.
Okay. I think she was getting better.
I will say this. When we did the tour with Dustin, the one thing he didn't want to talk about was implants. So judge your
really?
Own.
Really? I was wondering about that.
Judge your own conclusions from that. They want Midian to cut down in weight and have... Oh my god. I can't believe I'm about to read this sentence. They also want Midian to cut down in weight and have asked him to study tapes of Jake Roberts to play that type of psychological character.
Midian?
It's Jake Roberts.
Can you imagine?
Jesus Christ.
Oh, Midian. He's so shite.
Mark Henry's still not lost the weight they want him to lose. So there's some heat on him for that. Animals undergoing back surgery right now. LOD have been given word that they will be released when their contracts expire in the spring. There's been talk of Jericho working with X-Pac early on in his tenure when he comes in. What else is there?
At this point, do we know the countdown is to Jericho?
You wouldn't know. It's not been told. But I mean, it will. I mean, it is basically. On the Observer said, like it's to do with that. It's Jericho.
Okay, because I was just wondering if, like, on TV, if they've said who it's about. Because I know, like, obviously,
well, not on
Jericho...
TV. Not on TV. On TV, okay. On TV, you're not supposed to know anything.
Okay, gotcha. Because I know, like, I mean, obviously, the fans and the crowd, like, when Jericho debuts, because obviously, like, I've seen his debut. But they obviously know that it was going to be him. But I was just curious if they ever alluded to it on TV before he showed up.
Nope. TSN's Off the Record, which I guess a lot of you probably seen on YouTube, is going to film shows on July 22nd with Vince McMahon, then Vince and Linda, and then Shane and Stephanie. First show is going to discuss Vince's handling of the Owen Hart death, the Owen Hart Raw show, not stopping the pay-per-view, his letter to the Calgary Sun about Martha Hart, why nobody from WWF went to Brian Pillman's funeral, Jesse Ventura and the unionization of wrestlers. So I'll maybe see if I can dig that out, and if I can, maybe watch it for one of the episodes.
That sounds interesting for sure.
Mick Foley is now not expected to return after double knee surgery till after SummerSlam. And I think that's about it.
Let Mick Foley rest.
Let him rest, ladies and gentlemen.
I mean, I know that it's like Mick Foley doesn't want to rest. Like, he is his own worst enemy at this point because he's the one that wants to, like, keep showing up and doing things. But, oh my gosh, the man fell off a cage and worked for way too long. Like, I just want him to be okay.
So that is pretty much it from us. I am going to go back to drinking and Sandra's going to go to work. So that's pretty much it.
I think you're going to have significantly more fun. We do have a beer tasting today, so that's helpful.
That's good. Whose song should play us out?
Who was interesting on this show? I know I can't choose Ken Shamrock's music, even though I always want to. Let's play Kane's theme because Kane and X-Pac are pals.
Okay, here to play us out is Kane's theme. We'll be back next week with more. Well, no, we'll be back on Patreon next Thursday with Fully Loaded, and then we'll be back next Friday here with the fallout from the pay-per-view. We hope you will pledge us a couple of dollars a month to hear that. And yeah, we appreciate all your support. So thanks for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you soon. Bye.
Bye.